Welcome to One Decision. I'm your host, Christina Ruffini. This week, we're joined by co-host Sir Richard Dearlove, of course, former head of Britain's MI6. And there's, as usual, as there seems to be more and more, a lot to unpack in world events as everyone currently waits to see what exactly was discussed in that notorious 2, maybe 3 hour phone call between US President Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin earlier this week. Here's what we think we know. Putin allegedly rejected a ceasefire, agreeing instead to halt attacks on Ukrainian energy facilities, but only for 30 days. Just hours after the phone call, a Russian drone hit a Ukrainian hospital. So, of course, the bigger question is, what does this kind of limited ceasefire mean for the ongoing conflict? And how does this position Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in any future possible negotiations? All right, so Richard is here. He just got back after a very long drive, but he's logged on and we're going to get into it. First of all, what is your take in general on a 3 hour phone call with Vladimir Putin, and how do you think that goes?
Well, they clearly have an understanding which allows them to talk to each other. And given, you know, Putin's isolation internationally, it must warm his heart to be talking one-to-one to the President of the United States. But on this occasion, it's extraordinary that this has actually taken place. I mean, none of us could have guessed it. None of us could have predicted it, but it's happening. Now, sometimes to talk to your enemies is a very good idea, but it, as it were, the existential question is, what is the nature of the conversation? Because, I mean, I've been following the media and listening to various people being interviewed in Moscow, the distance between the Ukrainian position and what we believe the Ukrainian position is likely to be if it evolves at all, and the Russian position is infinite, absolutely infinite. And here's Putin saying, you know, no foreign support, no intelligence support for Ukrainian military, and that's the whole basis of the European support for Ukraine. So how on earth do you bridge this gap? And, you know, Trump tells us he had a very good conversation with Zelensky, that this was a very constructive conversation with Putin. Of course it was. That's how it's going to be portrayed. But have they actually made any significant progress? And I think we would all like to see an end to a very bloody, costly war. But, you know, this isn't a real estate deal. It's trying to end a major European war. And I have been talking to a few Ukrainians very recently, and what they're saying to me is about, even if it were a bad deal, they're going to fight on their own. The determination of the Ukrainian people is extreme. I mean, they've paid such a high price already. They're not going to stop. Even in the most adverse circumstances, they're not going to start sort of surrendering. And I mean, Putin is still virtually, as far as I can see, requiring more or less a complete, you know, surrender on the part of the Ukrainians to everything he wants. So how is Trump going to square that circle?
It seems like even very publicly, the Kremlin's position is basically what Putin has been wanting all along, right? No intel sharing, no NATO troops in Ukraine. Well, that's how we got here in the first place. It doesn't seem like he's moved at all or is inclined to. You mentioned that it's not a real estate deal. Tom Friedman in the New York Times mentioned that, you know, it took Secretary of State Henry Kissinger over a month of shuttling back and forth between Israel, Egypt, to, you know, stop that war in 1973. So he says Trump couldn't sell a hotel that quickly unless he was giving it away.
No, it's crazy. And I absolutely agree with you. And let's face it, I mean, Kissinger was a master of the art of diplomacy and fixing things. But all, if you read any of Henry's books, I mean, hours, months of preparation for these very complex initiatives and breakthroughs, like, you know, speaking to China as he did and developing a new relationship with the Chinese. And the idea that Trump can sort of drop out of the sky and just suddenly fix it. No. And I mean, I think he's now beginning to encounter the reality. Look, he can bully Ukraine, which he certainly did, into saying we'll accept a 30-day ceasefire, no conditions. But Russia, it's an entirely different question. So, I mean, I would love to see a transcript of the conversation.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting one of those.
You don't think so? Well, I just wonder what line they did it on. They must have done it on some... It's interesting to imagine, you know, how secure was the line between the two of them? Did any of those sophisticated intercept services in the world intercept the conversation? I probably didn't. But I mean, you know, if I were sitting in Whitehall, supportive of the Ukrainians, I'd love to know exactly what happened in the conversation to try to get the dynamics and understand the chemistry of this peculiar situation. You may not have heard it, but there was an interview on the BBC with this dreadful man, Markov. You know, what he was saying was so extreme, you know, Nazi fascist regime, you know, this isn't an independent country. And I mean, he does more or less represent the Kremlin view. And then you've got Peskov, also the spokesman, saying, you know, the President of the United States and Putin, they trust each other. I mean, where are we heading with this? I'm hoping that the sensible voices in the Trump administration, and let's be fair, there are some very sensible voices in there, that they are heading in a constructive direction. But at the moment, I'm really quite worried.
Well, talk to me a little bit about what it's like to deal with the Russians.
I was head of service during a period when there was a brief honeymoon post 9/11 before, you know, things went belly up, when Blair and the rest of us thought, well, here's Putin, he's a new leader, maybe we can have a different sort of relationship with Russia. And we did try quite hard, and we went to Moscow quite a bit, and we had some interesting meetings. But the trouble is that you feel a lot of the time that you're being set up for a fall. The best advice I ever got about Russia is, if once you're in Russia, nothing happens to you by accident. So the more bizarre the event, you know, it didn't happen by accident. And, you know, we were made to wait for meetings. But when things got icy, which they did in my final visits to Moscow, I mean, it was just bizarre. Things went wrong, people didn't turn up. And I mean, it was all deliberate to make you feel suddenly that you were unwelcome.
We were talking a little bit about the relationship between Trump and Putin and this level of trust that Trump seems to have in Putin, unclear how Putin feels about Trump. We spoke to Fiona Hill in a previous episode. She's a former senior director for European and Russian affairs on the National Security Council, and she also worked on the Trump administration. She had some interesting things to say about the Putin-Trump relationship on the podcast. Let's take a listen.
Putin is pretty confident, given his experiences with Trump in the past, that Trump will be quick to try to resolve the whole conflict and, you know, war in Ukraine in his favor. You know, obviously, Putin has had Trump's number for some time. He knows how to manipulate him. You know, he's been very good at the art of flattery with Trump. He sees Trump as an asset in many respects, because although Trump can be extraordinarily unpredictable, and, you know, Putin probably has to tread very carefully, in fact, not to insult him and not to kind of cross lines that Trump, you know, lays for himself, Putin is, you know, pretty confident that he can, you know, stoke up the culture wars here, there and everywhere. And just with a little bit of deft use of political influence operations and propaganda, he can, you know, keep things sort of moving in his direction. It already is moving in his direction in any case.
I think there's a certain naivety and, let's say, intelligent simplicity about Trump. You know, I'm still hopeful that somewhere in this extraordinary series of events, there might be, you know, a positive outcome, because there are super intelligent people in the Trump administration who, okay, are themselves worried but feel that there is a strategy and a direction. But at the moment, I can't see what it is and I'm worried. But I'm prepared to remain, to an extent, open-minded before this finally plays out. There are things that have to happen, because I think the only way that Putin comes to negotiate seriously on a ceasefire if things start to turn adverse for him. And at the moment, there's absolutely no sign of that at all. Putin's vulnerability is actually the Russian economy. So there's no lever you can pull that has an immediate effect, but there are plenty of levers you can pull which in several months begin to seriously affect Russia's position. And let's face it, they're not in a happy place in regard to this war. They're in a mess. Yeah. I mean, we tend to think, well, you know, Russia holds all the cards. It's not as simple as that. They're in a pretty bad place as well themselves. So the Russians do have an incentive to reach a deal, but at the moment, they're only proposing a deal which gives them everything they originally asked for. And I don't think that's a viable position. Let's see what happens next.